Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, John Russell, and Katie Weaver. Later, Marcia James will bring us this week's People in America report. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
American officials have expressed deep concern about new fighting in eastern Ukraine between pro-Russian rebels and government troops. More than 10 people have been killed since Monday in and near the town of Avdiivka. Many others are wounded. On Tuesday, the State Department called for an immediate ceasefire. It said the fighting has left 17,000 civilians without water, heat, and electricity. It is extremely cold in the area right now, with temperatures as low as minus 18 degrees Celsius. NATO Chief Jens Stoltenberg also expressed concern about the situation in Ukraine. He urged Russia to use its influence with rebels in eastern Ukraine to stop the fighting. The European Union has called the fighting a blatant violation of the agreement known as the Minsk Protocols. That agreement, reached in Belarus's capital in 2014, calls for a ceasefire and for the withdrawal of heavy weapons from battle areas. The conflict in Ukraine began in 2014. That year, popular protests forced Ukraine's pro-Russian president, Viktor Yanukovych, out of office. Russia then claimed lawful control of Ukraine's Crimea Peninsula. After tensions increased, fighting started between pro-Russia separatist rebels and Ukrainian government forces. Western countries and the United Nations sharply criticized Russia's move to take Crimea. The United States and European Union ordered international economic restrictions against Russia that have hurt its economy for more than 2 years. More than half of the almost 10,000 people killed in the conflict have been civilians. America's new president, Donald Trump, has called for warmer relations between the U.S. and Russia. I'm Mario Ritter.
A large number of U.S. State Department workers have expressed concern about President Donald Trump's executive order on immigration. The Foreign Service officers and civil service employees added their names to a memo critical of the immigration order. State Department officials confirmed that the document was presented to the department's leadership through what they call the dissent channel. The channel is a way for U.S. diplomatic workers to offer their personal opinions about foreign policy issues. Last week, President Trump signed an order banning entry to refugees and people from 7 Muslim-majority countries. VOA reporters have read an early version of the State Department memo. It says the signers are worried that the order will not achieve its goal to protect the American people from terrorist attacks by foreign nationals admitted to the United States. The memo warns that the action will immediately hurt relations with allies in the fight against terrorism. It suggests other possible steps, including improving visa and immigration screening. State Department officials would not tell VOA how many people signed the dissent or what their duties are. However, sources tell VOA almost 1,000 people signed the dissent. Robert Ford served as the U.S. ambassador to Syria during the presidency of Barack Obama. He says if about 1,000 people signed the document, it would be much larger than the number who signed a dissent criticizing the Obama administration's policy on Syria. Diplomats say that dissent channel memo had 51 signatures. Laura Kennedy is a former ambassador to Turkmenistan. She said the large number of signatures and its release to reporters are clear indicators of the widespread concern within the department over this specific policy step and unease over the broad direction of foreign policy. On Monday, presidential spokesman Sean Spicer rejected the dissent. Spicer told reporters that anyone at the State Department who opposes the order should, in his words, either get with the program or they can go. He said the order is about safety of Americans, and the limits the president ordered are common sense. The State Department says it usually receives 4 to 5 dissent channel messages each year. Workers who use the dissent channel are guaranteed protection from punishment. Former diplomats strongly criticized Spicer's reaction. Some considered it a threat against members of the Foreign Service. Harold Hongju Ko is a former Assistant Secretary of State and State Department legal advisor. He is now a professor at Yale University School of Law in Connecticut. He told VOA, "The time-honored tradition of respectful dissent at state is supported by the very American and constitutional values that this cable honors and that the executive order tramples."
As of last week, Morocco was the only African country that was not a member of the African Union, or AU. That situation has changed. On Monday, African leaders decided to admit Morocco to the Union. The decision came as part of the leaders' meeting in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. 39 of 54 AU countries voted to support Moroccan membership with the group. The King of Morocco, Mohammed VI, praised the decision. "It is a beautiful day when one returns home after too long of an absence," he said. "Africa is my continent and my home." In July, Morocco announced its desire to rejoin the AU. The country formerly belonged to the organization's predecessor, the Organization for African Unity, or OAU. But Morocco left the organization in 1984 because of its move to recognize the disputed territory of Western Sahara as independent. It also was protesting the OAU's decision to admit the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic as a member. The Sahrawi Republic is a government in exile. It wants the Western Sahara to be independent. The United States does not recognize the Sahrawi Republic. It is considered the government arm of the group known as the Polisario Front. Morocco claims the Western Sahara and considers it an important part of its territory. The dispute over the area has lasted over 30 years. It has created tense relationships, notably between Morocco and Algeria, according to a 2014 report from Congressional Research Services. The service investigates legal and policy issues for the U.S. Congress. Some people living in the Western Sahara and supporters of the Polisario Front dispute Morocco's claim to the territory. The Western Sahara's delegation accuses Morocco of colonizing the large seaside territory. Sidi Omar is the delegation's ambassador at large. He says the leader's decision to admit Morocco without settling the Western Sahara question violates the AU's position against colonialism. He told VOA the Saharan Republic will not leave the AU. The delegation wants Morocco to stop claiming the territory. Omar thinks the AU decision has wider consequences. It does not only concern Western Sahara or the Sahara Republic, he said. It does concern Africa as a whole. If this principle of borders is not respected, Africa will be doomed to chaos. Delegates and diplomats told reporters in Addis Ababa that the idea of Africa sticking together is important. Egypt's Assistant Foreign Minister for African Affairs, Mohamed Idris, said that the general belief among AU leaders was that, at the end, we have to have the African House together. He explained that it was important to find a way forward, not a divisive way forward, but to move toward our common African interest, common African spirit. A number of delegates at the conference publicly and privately shared concerns about recent, sudden changes in U.S. policies. These include changes, or possible changes, to immigration, dealings with other countries, and environmental policies. Judy Wahungu is Kenya's cabinet secretary for the environment. She told VOA that talks about the Paris Agreement on climate change were overshadowed by the arrival of the new U.S. administration. She said China is prepared to reduce its pollution by showing leadership in solar energy. In her view, the U.S. position is not as clear.
We're then seeing pronunciations that the new U.S. administration is going to actually roll back on the commitments that have been made. As I've said, it's only January, and we hope that reason will prevail because we're all in the same boat.
African unity was the goal of the African Union's predecessor, the Organization for African Unity. It seems today's AU is getting closer to it, but in a more complex world. I'm John Russell.
Twitter is trying to make it easier for people to find important tweets. So now, a new tab called Explore replaces the Moments tab in the Twitter app. It is important to explore the Explore tab, as it is filled with many features. In fact, if you do not explore, you may wonder where search, trends, and other sections have gone in Twitter. The Explore tab is found in the bottom menu bar on the Twitter app, where the Moments tab used to be. Explore is only available in the updated Twitter app for iPhone and iPad. If you do not see Explore in the app, check to see if you have updated the app. According to the official Twitter blog, Explore will be coming to the Twitter Android app within a few weeks. Twitter has not said when or if Explore will be available on the Twitter website. The Explore tab is more useful than the Moments tab because Explore has more information. Popular videos or tweets are at the top of the Explore section. Explore also includes trends, search, moments, and Explore All. Each has a preview of the top listings, and you can tap More to see a longer list. If you are looking to see what is trending on Twitter, you will find it at the top of the Explore section. Trends on Twitter can be tailored to connect with your interests and location. Or you can choose a different location. If you are looking in Twitter for the search icon, a magnifying glass, you will not find it in the main section. Instead, the magnifying glass icon is used for the Explore tab. At the top of the Explore section is a search bar you can use to type in search terms, hashtags, and Twitter names. The Moments feature has not gone away. Instead, Moments is found in the Explore tab below Trends. Moments is a collection of what Twitter views as important tweets on trending topics. The Explore All section shows categories to explore. Sample categories in the Explore All section include NFL, news, sports, entertainment, and fun. Categories will probably change based on time of year and location. NFL, the National Football League, now gets the top spot in Explore All in the U.S. Users outside the U.S. might not see NFL in their Explore All section. Fun may or may not equal your idea of fun. Expect silly tweets that may bring a smile. I'm Katie Weaver.
Ralph Henry Reese remembers clearly the day he and his wife decided to start City of Asylum Pittsburgh. It was in 1997. He and his wife, Diane Samuels, were attending a talk by British Indian writer Salman Rushdie at the University of Pittsburgh. The famous author had just started making public appearances again after several years of hiding. Rushdie's 1989 novel, The Satanic Verses, had offended many Muslims because of its portrayal of Islam. After its publication, the Supreme Leader of Iran issued a fatwa ordering Rushdie's execution. While in hiding, Rushdie and other writers in danger formed the International Parliament of Writers. The group urged cities in Europe to provide support and safety for writers in exile. These cities became known as Cities of Asylum. Writers who stayed in these cities could feel safe and secure again. More importantly, they could also enjoy freedom of expression again. Rushdie spoke about the Cities of Asylum in that 1997 talk at the University of Pittsburgh. Almost immediately, Reese and Samuels started thinking about how they could make Pittsburgh a city of asylum, too. Henry Reese grew up near Pittsburgh in a small town called Homestead, Pennsylvania. The area was home to one of the first big steel plants in the United States.
A very famous small town because it was the site of the original labor riots back in the early steel industry and the sort of legendary, and it was a much studied community because of the turmoil and the immigrants in the community and the diversity of the people.
For much of his adult life, Reese was an entrepreneur. He owned his own business. He describes himself as being able to create and develop ideas. And in 1997, a new idea presented itself. Rushdie's mention of European cities of asylum made Henry Reese and Diane Samuels think about how they and the city of Pittsburgh might be able to help writers in exile.
He talked briefly about City of Asylum Network in Europe. And Diane and I had a house at the time. We were renting it out. It had been at one time a crack house, and we had acquired it to keep it from becoming a crack house again. And we thought, what a perfect house for a writer.
Shortly after hearing Rushdie's talk, Ralph Henry Reese wrote to the Cities of Asylum Network in Europe. He expressed interest in giving a writer in danger a safe place to live. Several years went by before Reese and Samuels heard anything. Then, in 2003, they received an email. The Cities of Asylum program was looking to expand in the United States. And 1 year later, the City of Asylum Pittsburgh opened its doors.
City of Asylum Pittsburgh began to provide sanctuary to a writer exiled under threat of persecution. Persecution meaning the writer could be endangered with prison, violence, or censored in a way that you can't publish freely.
City of Asylum Pittsburgh's first writer was Wang Xiang, a poet from China.
When he came here, he wanted to celebrate his freedom. He had never been allowed to express himself, never been published. He'd been tortured where his mouth had been beaten in, so he couldn't even recite his poetry publicly, or they tried to prevent it.
When Huang arrived in Pittsburgh, Reese says, he wanted to carve his poetry into the mountains outside the city. Huang spoke little English. He communicated through his wife, who translated for him. At first, Reese and Samuels thought they might have misunderstood Huang's wishes.
And we thought, are we really hearing this?
Indeed, that was Huang's wish. But Samuels came up with an easier way for Huang to display his words.
So Diane came up with the idea of putting his poetry on the outside of the house there. So he immediately came and did this beautiful calligraphy. It became a landmark instantly. People came looking for it. He would come out, perform his house.
The row house was once a drug house. Now it is decorated with Chinese poetry. Huang's home is known as House Poem. Today, City of Asylum Pittsburgh is made up of several row houses on the block of Samsonia Way. Its other houses have names. The names serve as reminders of the exiled writers who have lived there. City of Asylum Pittsburgh has provided homes for exiled writers from six countries: China, El Salvador, Burma, Venezuela, Iran, and Bangladesh. The program gives the writers a place to live, an income, and medical benefits. It also provides support for them to continue being who they are, writers.
We feel it's extremely important that the writer maintain the identity of being a writer, and the only way to do that in exile is to be published in the country you're in.
Reese says the City of Asylum Pittsburgh offers its writers a chance to express themselves freely without threat. And for some, that feeling is entirely new.
Freedom of expression can inspire many people in a deep way. This is a country, the United States is a country where First Amendment rights and the idea to speak your mind is just so deeply ingrained that I think that is fundamental, and everybody feels that as a sense of entitlement. But I think everybody in this community understands the value of what we have here and is more committed to understanding the meaning of creative expression, First Amendment rights in a different way than maybe we did before, because we have monuments in our midst, living monuments, who represent what it's like to lose that.
I'm Marcia James.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.